Charlie Granger starred in two of Alfred Hitchcock's most interesting films, Strangers on a Train and Rope, worked with directors like Nicholas Ray and Luchino Visconti, and went on to have a long career in television and on Broadway. Now, in collaboration with his longtime partner, Robert Calhoun, he has written an autobiography called Include Me Out, My Life from Goldwyn to Broadway. It is published by St. Martin's Press, and I'm very pleased to welcome them both to my show today. Hello.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Farley, the story of your discovery is one of those classic Hollywood stories. Would you tell us about it?
Well, my father found out from an old actor that there is going to be a play put on. And the old actor said there might be a part for me. And so,
how old were you?
Huh?
How old were you?
I was 18. Mm-hmm. And so I went down to see them, and it was the Mary Stuart Playhouse, and they were doing an English play called The Wookiee. And there was a couple, you know, little parts in it for me. So I got the job, and I was excited about it. And we did it, and it opened, and it was okay. And there was a talent scout there, and also someone from the Goldwyn studio. And so we got a call from the Goldwyn studio. They'd like to see me. And I went there, and I met Mr. Goldwyn and Louis Milestone and Lillian Hellman. And they said, read this. And I read it, and I said, thank you. And I went back to the casting director, who, you know, was very nice and very, he was really kind of for me. And I said, well, I did it. He said, okay, well, we'll let you know. So I went back to high school, and I was going on, and a week went by, and 2 weeks went by, and then I thought, well, you know, forget it. It's just hopeless. Nothing's happening. And finally, the phone call came, and they wanted me back. And they gave me a script to read that was different from what I'd done. And after I talked with them, with Hellman and Milestone, and there was this other man there, and he was a kind of a coach, a teacher from New York. And he said, go and have some lunch, and then come back, come to my office, and we'll do the scene. And I did that, and went to his office, and he said, do you know what this is about? And I said, well, yeah, I think I do. And well, he filled me in on a lot of things that I didn't know at all. And he said, okay, now do it. And I did the scene, and there was a pause, and he looked at me, and he said, you're the boy. Come with me.
And that led to you being in the North Star.
Yeah.
Directed by Louis Milestone, right. Written by Lillian Hellman, starring Dana Andrews and Ann Baxter, but also meant that you wound up signing a 7-year contract with Samuel Goldwyn. I'm sure at the time, let's bring Bob in here, I'm sure at the time he thought that was just about the greatest thing that could have happened to him.
Oh, sure. It saved his family from, you know, from working a lot of jobs, you know, several jobs and poverty. The $100 a week was terrific.
But it was $100 a week. That wasn't a heck of a lot. I mean, it was okay, but that wasn't big money in Hollywood. Even
not
then.
At all.
No.
Not at all.
And Samuel Goldwyn really lent you out more than he used you, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, he only made one, possibly two films a year. It wasn't like the other studios that cranked them out like an assembly line. So Farley didn't get that. And if he was making a weepy with Teresa Wright, there was nothing for it in it for Farley. He'd lend them out to another studio for about 10 times what he was paying them.
And you were still getting $100 a week?
Yeah.
When you did Rope for Hitchcock, were you still making $100 a week?
No, I'd come back from the war then, from Hawaii, and I think...
I think it was up to 250
I think
by
it
then.
Might have been up to 150 or 200 then.
You had been in the Navy. But Rope, most people, it never became a big success, but most people remember it as a kind of a technical feat because it was done in very long takes. Do you wish you'd had more theater experience at that time? Because later you studied with Sandy Meisner and did all sorts of plays. But at that time, would that have helped in doing something where you had to do 10 minutes
no,
at a stretch?
No, I could do it all right. I felt secure. It's just that I loved Jimmy Stewart, and he was a terrific man. And I felt he was wrong for the part, you know. I just did.
And you thought James Mason should have been in it.
Yeah.
He had just come to Hollywood at that time?
No, he'd been there for a while. And, you know, it was a hell of a thing to do, the movie, and Hitch, you know, insisted upon it and everything. And it was very difficult, you know. The sets all moved, and the chairs moved, and the tables moved, and everything, and you moved, you know. And it was very difficult, and I don't think it really turned out, you know, as well as Hitch had hoped.
Well, it was very dark. Today it might very well have more success.
I think because of the nature of the way Hitchcock shot it, he shot a complete reel of film, which then was about 10 minutes long. He rehearsed each of the takes. So in a bit of a way, that was like theater. Mm-hmm. I mean, you rehearsed it before you did it. You didn't just go on the set and...
Cut.
That's right.
But then he must have liked you a lot, Farley, because he also put you in Strangers on a Train, which was a huge hit. I don't know whether that had a major effect on your career.
Well, I think it did. And I was in Europe, and I'd come back, and the studio called and said, Hitch wants to see you at his home. So I went over to his home in a lovely, lovely place, one-story, you know, house with a living room, dining room, no pretense at all, except that it was right on the edge of a golf course. So it looked as though he had a lawn that went on forever. So that's what he liked, I think. But he told me this story, you know, and he said, what do you think of it? And I said, well, I think it's terrific. And he said, do you think you'd like to play, you know, the part? And I said, yeah, yes, yes. And I said, but what about Bruno, you know, who do you think would play him? And he said, well, I've been thinking about Robert Walker. And I said, oh, Hitch, that's terrible, because Walker then was in great trouble because of his marriage and had been arrested and all kinds of terrible things had happened, you know, to him. And but he got him, and he was an absolute
sweetheart,
and he was terrific.
And then he died not long after the film opened, or just before the film
opened. I saw him after we shot the film at some party or something, and he said, Farley, how are you? He said, we got to get together. You know, I'd love to see you. I want to see you. And I said, oh, I want to see you. I said, okay, well, when we changed phone numbers, and I said, I'll call or you call. And then it was like 2 days later, and I read he was dead.
Now, both of the films you did for Hitchcock involved men in murder plots, and both had kind of homosexual undertones. Was that a concern at the time? Were actors worried about that kind of thing being attached to their careers?
No, not with Hitch, certainly, you know. I don't think so.
Because people just understood that these were Hitchcock films, and they would have some kind of psychological dynamic
right.
as well.
Yeah.
Now, in the case of Robert Walker, you were very lucky with your co-star, but you were lucky with co-stars in a number of films. Not him, not only him, you had Alida Valli in Senso. You had Kathy O'Donnell, who is probably the greatest unknown actress in movie history. I never understood why she didn't become a superstar. And that was in They Live by Night.
Yeah.
So were those films all films that you wanted to do? Did you just luck
into
them?
Well, I'd just come back from the Navy, and I'm trying to think. Did I come back from the Navy?
Yeah, he had gotten back from the Navy, and he... Was it a friend's house at a party, and Ethel Chaplin said to him, "I want you to meet Nick Gray, who's out here with John Houseman."
And, now, he was a great theater director, but this was going to be his
first film.
Yeah. And wow, he started pretty much at the top.
And he just sat in the corner and stared at Farley all night, never said a word. Farley said, that makes me nervous.
It made me very nervous, And then I'd see him again, and he'd just stare at me. And then finally, the studio said that they were sending me a script. And it was, a script that Nick Bray had done, and John Houseman was producing. So I read it, and I liked it a lot, and I went over and talked to them. And he said, now, for the girl, is there any girl that you would like or prefer? And I said, well, I've been sort of doing things with Kathy O'Donnell, and I think she's good. So we did a test, and we got the parts.
And which was unusual, because it was RKO that was producing that film, and they had their own stable of both young men and young women, and they didn't want to pay Goldwyn's exorbitant rental fees. But John Houseman and Nick Ray both stuck up for Farley and Kathy, and
What happened to Kathy? Why didn't she make it bigger?
It's tragic. She married... she was supposed to be in another film that Farley made called Rosanna McCoy. And the first day he arrived at rehearsal, it had been canceled. And Kathy came in, and she was sobbing. And the prior week, she had married William Wyler's brother. And Wyler had broken up with Goldwyn. Wyler, who a lot of people think really was the Goldwyn touch, had left. And Goldwyn accused Kathy of marrying his brother just to get at Goldwyn. And he fired her and said, either you divorce the man or I'll fire you and you'll never work in Hollywood again.
Wow. He had that kind of power.
Yep.
And that's what he did. She did work once or twice again, because Farley did another film with her at Metro, but she never really worked again.
Now, Farley, you've said that most of the films you worked on weren't very good. You only like three, really, Strangers on a Train, Senso, and They Live by Night. Do you think that if you hadn't been under contract to Goldwyn and been so lend-outable, if you'd been perhaps somebody who could have made more decisions about your own career, that there would have been more films that you would be proud of?
I think so. I think if I was under contract to Metro or to 20th Century Fox or whoever, I would have done more, yeah.
They did so many more films a year that they were used to grooming younger people. Goldwyn really didn't have a stable of players. I mean, he had a half a dozen players under contract, and Farley was the only young man, so he wasn't used to building careers.
Well, we often hear about the genius of that system, but judging from this book, sometimes it worked against genius. For example, Hitchcock wanted Grace Kelly for Strangers on a Train, not Ruth Roman, but he couldn't get her because of some studio contracts.
Well, she wasn't known at the time. Nobody knew who she was. And Hitchcock had already forced Warner Brothers to pay for Robert Walker, to pay Metro for Robert Walker and Goldwyn for Farley. So they said, you got to use a Warner Brothers player for the girl.
Farley Granger and Robert Calhoun are my guests. We're talking about Farley Granger's book, Include Me Out, My Life from Goldwyn to Broadway, published by St. Martin's Press. So when you finally were out of your contract, you did come to New York to try to work in theater?
Well, what happened was I went into the office of my agent, and he said, we have to talk about something. And I said, what is it? And he said, Goldwyn is going to let you go. And I said, oh, great. And he said, the only thing is he wants all your money. And I said, what? And he said, he wants all the money that you have back.
To buy out of your own contract.
Yeah.
Could he just do that?
Yeah, he did it. And I said, and I didn't care. I said, give him the money. Give him the money. I don't care. I just want to get out, you know. And then what happened was my agent called and said, come into the office. And he said, there's this. He said, now, you know, you have no money. First of all, you got to get that straight in your head. Now, an Italian director who is supposed to be very famous in Italy and in Europe wants you to be in his film. He wanted Marlon Brando, but he couldn't get Marlon Brando. And he wanted Ingrid Bergman, but he couldn't get her. But he's really something extraordinary. And he will also pay you the money that, you know, Goldwyn got. So if you think you would like to do it, it's in Italy and you'll be there several months and everything. And I said, well, yeah, I think I want to do it. Let me read
but
it.
But you didn't know what you were getting yourself into. Luchino Visconti is one of the greatest filmmakers,
yeah.
But also not the easiest person to work with. But interestingly, always interested in American actors. Later, he did Burt Lancaster, very nice turn in The Leopard.
Yeah. Right.
Dirk Bogarde in The Damned, well, he's English, but
English,
still, he didn't always want to use Italian actors. And you suddenly look like you're speaking perfect Italian.
What he did was his agent said to Farley, he will pay you what Goldwyn got for you on loan out for 3 months. And every day that goes over that, he'll pay you double. And since it took 9 months...
This was lucrative.
Yes.
And then you came back to New York and you studied with Sandy Meisner. Meisner said, why do you want to study with me? You're already a movie star. Did you feel, even though you'd been in some pretty terrific films and done quite well, that you still had a lot to learn?
I felt that in the sense that I was crazy about, and still am, I was crazy about the theater. I love to see live people on a stage, you know, and I love to be one as well. And that's what I wanted. You know, I was not fed up, but I just didn't want to do films anymore.
And then you wound up doing a lot of television, which was almost like theater because Playhouse 90 and
Kraft
Television Theater were kind of like plays.
That was like rehearsal for the theater, absolutely, you know, because I did a lot of those. And they were terrific, and I loved it. I loved doing live theater, you know, and live television. There was, you know, you just couldn't make a mistake, that's all.
But you didn't do much more in Hollywood.
No, I didn't do anything. I lived here.
And it's interesting, the title of the book is Include Me Out, which is Sam Goldwyn's famous line.
Yes.
And you wanted to get out. We can't get into all of the other stuff in here, but you're very frank about your love life with both men and women here, and some pretty famous people pass through your life. But you've been with Bob for how long?
We met in 1963 when I was production manager for Evil Igalian's Repertory Theater, National Repertory Theater, and Farley joined the company to play John Proctor in The Seagull, I mean John Proctor in The Crucible,
mm-hmm.
and The Seagull and Ennui's Ring Round the Moon, three plays in the first season, we toured the country and then came into New York and played the Velasco Theater, and that's how we met.
So that's 40 years now.
Yeah.
And collaborated on this book.
That's right.
Which also includes some fabulous pictures, by the way. You save all your old pictures? Or
no,
did you have to go and research
No, that was a torturous search.
Yes, it was terrible. It was rough. I want to say that when we did the...
Crucible.
Arthur Miller came.
I have to leave it there, unfortunately. Farley Granger will be appearing at the Film Forum on Monday night at 8 o'clock. They'll be showing clips from his movies. He'll also be reminiscing along with Robert Calhoun and the historian Foster Hirsch. He'll be signing books later. And the book is Include Me Out, My Life from Goldwyn to Broadway, published by St. Martin's Press. Thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Indeed.
It was a pleasure.